Session number 11208.
Mr. Eric Hooper, Reel 3. We were talking about your time at 168 Octu at Farnborough, and I think one aspect of training that's occurred is that we didn't mention is that of field engineering. What did you learn about that?
Oh, yes, well, of course, what we had to do was to start off by digging a slip trench. Now, in field engineering, what the idea was, you give a man a task, and his task was to dig a slip trench a certain depth, and normally, when he'd done that, that depth, he was finished that particular duty. But of course, during action, that doesn't happen. But the thing was, we started to, you developed your slip trench, and then you dug into a firing step, and then from then you started to develop the ordinary zigzag trench system which was used in the First World War. But it was rather interesting, though. Part of our training was that it was taken over a trench system at night time, which we did. There was quite a large trench system dug not very far from Farnborough. We had to go one night about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we had to take over from somebody else, and we had to do it in the most quiet way possible, and it was rather very interesting, but boring at times, of course.
What did you have to check on do when you got into a new system?
Well, what you did, you went and took over from, say, a particular section. And if you were an NCO, you saw the NCO and saw that section, and you used to say to him, right, what's the situation? Can you tell me anything about these trenches and, you know, things like that? If there was any particular stores there which you had to take over from him and check those. And that was it. And we were there for about 3 hours.
Now, Your training came to an end. We mentioned the report that you got, and you passed the report. Was there any sort of ceremony when you were commissioned or anything special?
No. In actual fact, what had happened was, about a month before you were going to be commissioned, you more or less got to know whether you were going to go out or not.
Did any fail?
There was one or two. Not many. What would happen in those cases, they give them an extra chance. We used to say, well, you could stop on for another month to see how we develop in that other month, you see. But what used to happen, there used to be a regimental tailor, there used to be several regimental tailors, and they used to come along, and after you haven't decided which regiment you want to be in, you had to write to the honorary colonel of that regiment, asking him if he would accept you into the regiment, and you give him the reason why you want to be a member of that regiment.
And who would you selected?
Colonel Matthews, he was the honorary colonel of the regiment in those days. He lived at Hexham.
And this is a DLI?
And I selected the DLI, yes.
What made you pick them?
Oh, and my father hadn't been in the DLI. And I thought, well, it's a local regiment. I'm near home and this sort of thing.
You didn't fancy going back into an infantry battalion of the Northumberland Fusiliers?
Oh, no. Because I thought searchlights were most uninteresting.
But you could have gone into another battalion of the Northumberland, you know, an infantry
battalion. Well, they hadn't an infantry battalion in the Fusiliers then. They had searchlights. The 6th Battalion turned into a Royal Tank Corps. Then you had a machine gun company of the Royal Battalion of the RNF. Then you had a motorcycle battalion, you see. So I just stuck to the infantry.
And what happened after you'd been accepted by Matthews?
Oh, well, what happened then, when you were accepted, and about a month before you were going to be commissioned, you a regimental tailor used to come along every month, and he would see you and ask you what your regiment was, and if you wanted to, you could give him your order for your uniform. And therefore, by the time you were commissioned, your uniform was ready. And so what happened when you were commissioned, you'd say on the Friday night, you said, right, you're commissioned. On the Saturday morning, you put all your kit, your ordinary soldier's kit, into a kit bag, had it sent down to all the sod station, and that was sent to the depot of the regiment of your choice, which, as I say, DLI was sent to Brandsworth. And you just walked out of the octo as an officer.
What did you buy as an officer, and did you get a grant?
Oh well, you got a grant. As a matter of fact, these tailors, they allowed you credit, you see, and then when you commissioned, you got a grant, which of course you had to pay your bills with that.
But the grant cover the bills?
Well, no, not always. I mean, if you wanted any extras, I mean, I got myself some extra brown parade boots because I thought they were smarter than the ammunition boots, you know. But the only time I used to wear them when we're on sort of parades or ceremonial parades.
What was an officer's kit? Well, what uniforms were you? Did you get?
Well, during the war, there was no mess kit because that went by the board during the war, and all you got was your service dress. Sam Brown, hat of course, shoes, and if you wanted to, a great coat, which I got a great coat. A lot of them didn't get a great coat, they just went and had a great coat and had it sort of altered. And then, of course, with your grant as well, you had to buy stuff, camping equipment.
Such as
a camp bed, a valise, a wash basin on stand. But a lot of them didn't purchase those until the actual time when they really needed them. And I didn't really need them until we got to Cyprus, and then there was an officer's shop there, which was run by the Nafi. Which you could buy all these sort of things much cheaper than you can buy them at home. And I bought myself a table, which was quite a good table, which was with a folding stand, and the top was actually made in laths with a canvas top, and it rolled up, you know, took very little space, things like that.
So when did you pass out? What month in 1940, do you remember?
About the end of June.
And when did you join? You joined the battalion straight
then, No, then I went to Brandsworth. I was at Brandsworth, and I only stopped at Brandsworth one night, but after that I was sent the next day to a training, infantry training unit at, what's the name of the place now? Bishamoor.
Which training unit was it? Do you remember the name?
Well, no, it wasn't. What used to happen at Brandsworth Castle, again, when they got the new recruits in, they were sent to a training company, you see, which was more or less run like an ordinary battalion training company, where you had platoon commanders and you had... your permanent sergeants there, permanent instructors, and I went there more as a platoon commander.
So it was in effect part of the depot, just based part
of the depot, you see. Yes, they had several companies around about there, you know.
And what were you doing there?
Well, my job more or less was supervising the permanent staff, you know, the sergeants, and occasionally I used to have to give them a lecture on. Certain things, you know.
What was the standard of the recruits coming in at that time?
Well, I wouldn't say they were very bright. Again, you know, I don't know why I should say that, really, but I suppose that most of them was where they, you know, I suppose that this would be the schooling, perhaps, you know, I can't really put a word to it, but, you know, of course, again, they were just rookies, young rookies, you see.
Were they shaping up all right?
Well, they weren't shaping too bad.
What about the permanent staff? Were they old soldiers or what?
Well, I suppose I would say they're regular soldiers. I think probably they'd seen 2 or 3 years, you know, ordinary service, you know, before the war. But, I mean, I wouldn't have called them what I'd call an old soldier now.
And you were billeted in Ushermore?
I was billeted at a house in Ushermore, yes.
And how long were you there for?
I was only in there about 3 weeks.
So it would still be roughly either late July or early August?
Yes.
Yeah. And where were you sent then?
Then I was sent down to Johnny 9th Battalion. Down at... the headquarters in those days was down at Lyme Regis. And we were on coastal defences in those days. And then I went to D Company. And our company headquarters was at Bridport.
What reception did you get on arrival?
Well, as a matter of fact, I wouldn't say I got any reception at all. All I had to do was I went to Bridport and I never saw the... I beg your pardon, I arrived at Lyme Regis. I never saw the commanding officer, but I was instructed to... rather, the driver was instructed to take me to D Company at Bridport. And on that particular night, I was put on orderly officer.
Did the company commander welcome... Who was the company commander, by the way, at that time?
There was a man by the name of Major Robinson. Major P.B. Robinson.
And did he welcome you, or give you any idea of what was to happen?
He was quite reasonable, didn't he? He did fill me in about certain things, what was happening, you know, what was expected around about that area.
Can you remember what sort of briefing he gave you?
No, not really. He just said, unfortunately, I haven't got a billet for you at the moment, so you're on duty tonight. So I spent the night sleeping on a stretcher in the orderly room, and the next day, he took me to an area where there was some pre-war, not caravans, but little chalets, and I was put in one of those chalets which belonged to two other officers, but the mere fact that one of the young officers, he was going to be on duty that night, so I had his bed for that night, till eventually we got organised and then we got a house which was all right. Then.
That was at Bridport, the house?
That was at Bridport then, yes.
Was that billeted in the house with civilians then?
No.
There's
no civilians in the house then, no. Because we were in coastal defences then, and that was all being mined and what have you.
I'll ask you about that. How did you get on with the officers of D Company?
Oh, well, I got on very well with them, yes.
Did you fit in well?
Oh, yes. Because, you see, in those days, you weren't together very often, you know, because we're... Either you were sleeping or you were along at your particular platoon, which was situated on in sort of a entrenching system, you know, beside the...
So you didn't have a company mess?
You didn't have a company mess, oh no.
Okay, well, you were given a platoon, I presume.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what positions were they in, defensive positions, coastal?
Well, I wouldn't say they were very, very good because they were sort of ready-made sort of things. You know, you hurriedly made. And, of course, we hadn't much time to develop them as well because we weren't there that particular length of time till we were brought out and we went up to a place called Maiden Newton. And we were there for a few...
What pattern of defences were they? Were they as you'd practised at
Farnborough? Well, they were more or less... slip trenches dug and probably what they'd call another bigger one built, what they'd call a sort of platoon command post. And of course the weapons we had then was all sorts, you know, it'd be the odd 303, there might be some an old Tommy gun Or some old weapon, you know, because we lost most of our weapons then.
What, you hadn't... What about Lewis and Brenz and Vickers?
There wasn't a Lewis gun there, but nor did I say a Vickers, because a Vickers would have been used by the machine gun companies, you know, because they used Vickers. But we did have a lot of Molotov cocktails, which were ready to...
Were they ready-made?
Well, they were all ready-made there, yes.
You didn't make them up?
We didn't make them, no. Actual fact, there were only bottles filled with the stuff, you know.
Petrol.
Yeah, petrol and whatnot, yes.
Had you been told how to use them in action?
Well, I hadn't, but maybe the boys before me might have been told before I went there, because they were before, you know, they were there when I got there.
So how was the day organised? What was a typical day like at Bridport?
Well, again, there was no leave during the daytime, and all the time we spent more or less was making your defences better than what they were, you see, try to improve upon them.
Were you involved in laying minefields?
I actually wasn't in laid, no, not me. Yeah.
Who would do that?
The engineers did that.
Yeah. And no one was allowed on the beaches, were they?
No, nobody allowed on the beaches, no. So I know that there was one particular time when we were there, there was an enemy aircraft had been shot down, and he was able to land his plane on the beaches, just somewhere beside Abbotsford. And we had to go and get hold of the pilot and bring him in and transfer him to battalion headquarters, and away he went.
Did you actually went on that, did you?
Yes.
How did, was that beach mined?
No, because the beach was, in fact, it's... How we landed, I do not know, because the plane was practically submerged at high tide. But, you know, he was very, very lucky. Mm.
What? So you'd spend the day working on the defences. What about the night?
Well, night time, well, there was the... What you had then, you had a couple of men standing guard on night, and the other ones were sleeping as best as they possibly could. And you yourself had to... make spot checks on the situation, you know, just to see if they were there or if they were awake and what have you.
Were they reliable?
Oh, yes, yes.
What other duties did you have as a platoon commander? What was your role?
Well, there wasn't much more you could do. As I said, that I wasn't there that long because...
Okay, we'll come back to that in a more appropriate time, yes. Then. What about the local civilians? How did they treat you? Did you see anything?
We didn't see many local civilians because they weren't allowed in the area. You see, where we were, it was very similar to, shall we say, the beaches up Northumberland, where there wasn't many buildings about, mostly farms.
Right, now you moved from Bridport to Maiden Newton.
Yes.
And what were you doing there?
Well, at Maiden Newton, again, all you did there was the usual company training in the morning, a bit of foot slogging, and then training, weapon training, such as the training on the mortar or the Bren gun.
Had there been any developments in the train? I mean, the 9th had been in France, had experience of the modern warfare. Well, had there been any developments in training or methods to take account of it?
No, nothing like that.
So the training was more or less
the same, yes. Yeah.
Did people tell you about what had happened in France? Did you ask people?
Well, I asked various people, but they again were confused because at the finish, they didn't know what was really happening. And you know, this happened, I think, a lot during the war, you know, even when we were having exercises, and we'll say that a battalion was in defence, and they were supposed to be being attacked by the enemy, and things happened, but they themselves, they didn't seem to be in the picture. And I think that happened through quite a lot during the war. But I think near the end of the war, I think it got better because when you used to have the O groups, you had time to go back from one command to a lower command. So eventually you got to a section and you could tell the section, exactly what the situation was, and I think they felt much better then.
As far as you were concerned, when you got to the 9th, they hadn't really learnt any lessons from their experiences in France.
I don't think so, no.
Did you have a company mess?
Yes.
Well, how was that organised?
Well, you see, each company had a company cook, and in those days as well, that you're an officer's batman, they also mucked in with doing sort of mess chores. Probably one might be to do the cooking for you, or another one would be on sort of waiting, what have you. But they're only small things, you know.
Would this be an informal mess?
Very informal, yes.
You're Batman. You each had an officer's servant.
An officer's servant, yes.
How did you get on with yours? Do you remember much
about
him?
Oh, yes, I got on very well with him, yes.
Do you remember his name from that time?
Well, the one I had that time, his name was Duffy. Later on, he left me, and I've got another one, which I had him practically right through the end of the war.
Well, at this time, what would the Batman do for you? What was his job?
Well, his job really was to make sure that, you know, he cleaned your uniform for you and woke you up in the morning. If you're lucky, he'd bring you a mug of tea. And then a lot of Batman were trained to be drivers too, so you could, you know, you could drive if necessary.
So he'd be your driver as well?
He'd be my driver as well, yes. And you use him as a runner too, you know, that was the idea of the officer servant.
How did you get on with him? Would you be on first name terms or?
Well, no. Although I'd call him by his Christian name, he always respected me. He called me sir. In fact, he had a nickname. He was nicknamed Pluto. I don't know why, but he was a grand bloke. In fact, he lived at Sunderland, and I used to see him quite often after the war was over. He used to come and see me. And he's dead now.
And so you spent the time at Maidenhead was largely on training. Then.
Largely on training, such as again in the morning you used to have foot slogging, you know, now it's foot slogging, and then there'd be weapon training, route marches, gas drill.
What was gas drill?
Well, you know, you'd be marching and on a route march, and suddenly you would say, right, gas. And in those days, they had to put the gas masks on and do the gas capes. In those days, of course, we had big gas capes which went over your head and over your body as well. And they were rolled up at the back of your pack, your small pack, and a little string down here. And if you pulled the string, it just came down. It was a cape, and it came round you. That was for the mustard gas.
And how long were you there at Maiden Newton? Roughly. We can look the dates up later.
Again, Maiden Newton, I think somewhere about between a month and 2 months. And from there, we moved up to Tiverton. And at Tiverton, of course, we more or less had our home up there. We were there that long.
Where were you billeted?
Well, I was billeted in Tiverton itself. I was very, very lucky. I was billeted in a big house which belonged to a director of a local brewery, Starkey Knight and Ford's.
They were still living there then?
Oh, they're still living there. Oh, yes. I mean, Tiverton was just functioning just like a normal town.
And what did you... how did you get on with the family you were billeted in? What did they do for you?
They were very, very good. As a matter of fact, the time we were there, we spent Christmas, that's right, and they invited my wife to come down and stop with them over Christmas, which she did. Very, very good. And then we had We had a sort of a dinner and a party in the mess. At about midday-ish. And at night time we were invited to dine with the leading gentlemen of our billet.
Did you establish a regimental mess at that
time?
Oh
yes, we did.
Was that the first time they'd had?
That's the first time I've ever been with a regimental mess.
And was this more formal?
Yeah, oh, it was very formal. Yes.
Could you describe the sort of protocol of a regimental mess?
Well, the point is this, right? When you went in there, whatever happened, you weren't allowed to wear Sam Brown in the messes at all. As soon as you went in, you took your Sam Brown off and placed it on the table, which we little hallway, which we called the ante room, and then you went into another room where, if you wanted a drink, you had a drink if any available, and then. Mess we would come in and say that lunch was ready, and of course you went in and had your lunch. Now lunch was reasonably informal, but in the evening it was pretty formal. That dress had to be server's dress, whereas during the daytime, of course, it was battle dress. But the duty officer, of course, he came to the mess early on and had his meal earlier, and. You could have it earlier or you could have it later. It depends, because there used to always be an officer who had to go up to the duty officer who was in the orderly room to relieve him while he had his dinner, I should say. As regards lunchtime, well, that's all right, because the telephone in the mess was always somebody available to answer the telephone in case of emergency. But we had to dine in the mess at least three nights a week.
That was the rule?
That was the rule by the colonel. And if you wanted to dine out, you had to ask permission. And there was an officer, who used to sit at the right of the colonel, and if you were late, you had to go to him and apologise to him if you were late for a meal. You had to ask him as well, during the daytime, if you could be excused. And it depended whether the excuse was reasonable enough to excuse you. Well, fair enough, you excused you.
Why would you want to be excused? I mean...
Well, it could be. You might, you know, we made some very good friends in Tiverton, and we used to be invited out to the house for a meal.
Was there much ceremony at the actual... I'm thinking of dinner now. Was there much... Well, the more formal meal. Was there much actual protocol and ceremony?
No. There was no toast, anything like that. No. You just... you had to wait till the colonel came in. Of course, when he came in, they had to stand up to receive him. And then, of course, you took your time from the colonel from then on.
Were certain subjects taboo in the mess?
Well, I don't think anything was said, but nobody discussed politics or religion. Or I don't think anybody criticised any higher command, anything like that.
Would you be allowed to talk about your job?
Oh, yes. I mean, everybody just talked about, to each other and what have you, and the colonel might say something, and somebody said, well, yes, I quite agree, because of so, you know... Oh, yes.
Was it a happy mess, regimental mess, sir?
Well, it was happy to a point with the younger officers. But what used to happen was that as soon as we had dinner, I think that most of them went off to make their own enjoyment. Because, unfortunately, the CO, which we had, whom I respected very much, Colonel Percy, he'd been in the army quite a long time. He was in the First World War. And his thoughts of enjoyment weren't the same as the younger officers. You know, he wasn't teetotal, but, you know, he'd have his drink, and all he wanted to do was just either sit in the mess and read. And
What did you younger ones want to do?
We wanted to get out and have a few jars.
Did they have any mess games?
No. Mind, we did later on. This is after we came back from the Middle East.
I'll come to that then.
That was, yes.